Welcome to the latest edition of Wax Ecstatic. I am your host, Matt Salmon. Thank you so much for tuning into this podcast. As today, we got a lot to do in a very short amount of time. We've got to talk about the card we pulled as we're taking a look at the 82 Donruss set. And of course, pulling a card from my own personal monster box of cards from the 1980s. Very interesting player and an interesting set too, the 82 Donruss set. I've got a great story about my childhood collecting with 82 Donruss, so we'll share that in a moment. But first, I want to share some comments that you shared with us via our Twitter handle. That is at Wax and Gum Stains. Again, at Wax and Gum Stains. You can always send your comments, questions, memories of your baseball card collection growing up as a kid. If you're like me and you grew up in the 80s and 90s, baseball cards were freaking everywhere. There was no way you could avoid them. And chances are you collected like I did and you have some great memories. Maybe you don't collect anymore, or kind of like me, you do it in just little bits and pieces. Well, whatever your collecting habits, you're more than welcome to share them again at Wax and Gum Stains. All right, now this comes to us from Chris Rawls. Very interesting comment here. This goes back a couple of podcasts to our podcast about the 81 Donruss set. The card that I pulled from the Monster Box was Red Shandienst, the longtime manager and coach of the St. Louis Cardinals. And even though Red Shandienst is a great person, was a great player and coach and manager, I just railed on the manager card. I've never been a fan of the manager card, and I made the argument that the manager card was the worst card you could pull from a pack, even worse than the set checklist card or the team photo card. And Chris brought up a great point. He said that he loved the manager card. Sometimes that was the only way he could own some legends when he was a kid, and he actually put together this nice photo collage, which, again, you can look at Wax and Gum Stains on Twitter. Just come down our timeline, and you'll see it. And Chris put together a photo collage of the 64 tops Yogi Berra, the 74 tops Leo DeRocher, and the 72 tops Ted Williams. So, Chris, you brought up a great point. Yes, sometimes the manager card was the only way you could get a legend. But my argument was that, for every DeRocher or Williams or Torrey, you know, you ended up with Joe Schmo, the manager where you just go, okay, who is this guy and why should I get excited about it? But Chris did bring up a great point. Sometimes you had some legendary players who became managers who got the manager card. And it's a lot easier to afford a 72 tops Ted Williams card than a, say, like 56 tops Ted Williams card. And I have to add, as a hockey card collector when I was a kid, one of my favorite cards was a 74 tops Scotty Bowman card. That is technically Scotty's rookie card because he didn't have an NHL career. He suffered a head injury, got into coaching, and 25 years later, he finally made his trading card debut with that top set. So there are some benefits to the manager slash coach card, although in general, I was never a big fan of them. David Armour, talking about 81 Donruss, mentioned that the Danny Ainge card is in that set. And David is correct. Danny Ainge, of course, the baseball/basketball star, chose the path of basketball and was a pretty successful player and coach. This actually harkens back to our discussion about 81 Tops, about Tim Stoddard, who was also a baseball and basketball star. He starred at NC State with basketball, won national championship with them, but then took the career path of baseball. Now, David, I have to remind you, though, that Danny Ainge was also featured in the 81 Fleer set, although that card, for some reason, has just not been ingrained in our memories as much as the 81 Donruss card. I have no idea why, but if you're looking for the Danny Ainge player card, he was with the Toronto Blue Jays briefly. You can find that in Donruss or Fleer from 1981. Brennan McDonald, not a big fan of the 81 Donruss set, period. For one thing, he mentions errors galore. And in our podcast, I talked about how there were a lot of errors, mostly because Donruss had so many old photos that you had players who were pictured wearing the uniform of one team, yet they played for another. And I used the example of Ray Burris, who by then was a pitcher for the Mets, but the only picture that Donruss had on hand was when he was a pitcher with the Chicago Cubs. So you have Cub Ray Burris and Mets on his Donruss card. It did not look very good at all. And something else Brennan brings up, which I also brought up, although a little more in passing, and talk a little bit about it here. He said it was the worst cardstock ever. And I do agree that the 81 Domrus cardstock was terrible in terms of quality. Now, in terms of color, I liked it. Fleer and Donruss came out with the clear white, I shouldn't say clear, you know, the white cardstock, which was different from Topps. Topps, for the longest time, had the gray cardboard stock. In fact, I believe the last time they had a white cardboard stock was the 1970s set. And they had the white cardboard stock for much of the 60s, but starting in 71, they went back to the gray. But even though Donruss had a cleaner color mix with the white cardboard stock, the quality of it was not that good. And as I mentioned in our podcast about 81 Donruss, you had a lot of decal edging, some very rough cut cards, but also pretty brittle. And something else I noticed too, the 81 Donruss set, the cards would yellow over time. And I always thought that was odd. It's just like they didn't handle oxygen real well, which is kind of hard when you have a collector's card. But there you go. It just didn't look good in that first year. Rough cuts. It yellowed, very brittle. And the Fleer set, too, if you have a collection of Fleer cards that weren't stored properly, they would also yellow with time. And I noticed the Fleer set in 1981, the cards would bow just a little bit, too. So if you have a stack of 81 Fleer cards just sitting in a box somewhere, you haven't looked at them in a while, if you take them out, chances are they're not perfectly straight. They've somehow, over time, slightly bent in through the middle. And, you know, it's nothing that you couldn't hammer out by putting it in a plastic sleeve or a page or a screw-down holder if it's a valuable card, but certainly didn't stack up nice and even and straight as the 81 top set did. And finally, Patrice Cote mentioning in our commentary on the 82 Fleer set, which I asked, was it the worst set ever? And I do believe it was. He did mention in the picture that I found online, which shows five 82 Fleer cards, one including Terry Francona with the Montreal Expos. He loves the Francona card. And I love the Francona card too. And it's funny, if you look at the picture of the 82 Fleer Terry Francona, he doesn't quite look like he knows what to do with the photographer there. He's kind of very timidly holding a bat in front of him. He's just kind of like looking at the guy, go, okay, do I smile? Do I walk away? What do I do? And it's kind of a funny natural pose of Terry Francona, of course, far more better known as a major league manager, Philadelphia, Boston, of course, now with Cleveland. But to fans of the long-lost Montreal Expos, Tito Terry Francona will be loved as he wore the bleu, blanc, and rouge of the Montreal Expos in the early 80s. Now, we're moving on to the 82 Donruss set. And the card that I pulled out here is a really good card in terms of the player, but also a good example of what Donruss did right in 82 as opposed to 81. Our random pull from the 5,000 card monster box of 1980s baseball cards I have. Card number 358, Larry Heisel, an outfielder. Much of his career spent with the Milwaukee Brewers, although he did play for a couple other teams. We'll talk about him in just a little bit. But Larry Heisel, one of Harvey's Wallbangers, a member of the Milwaukee Brewers. Of course, the 82 Brewers making it to the World Series, taking the Cardinals to Game 7 and losing. And the Brewers have not been back to the World Series since then. In fact, since 82, they've only been to the playoffs just a handful of times, and you still have to go back a few years for that. But Larry Heisel wearing the old blue and gold, powder blue and gold Milwaukee Brewers jersey. And in this picture, it looks like he's about to give somebody a beatdown with his baseball bat. He looks like he's going to give somebody the business here. And if I was going up against Larry Heisel in an alley fight, and he had a baseball bat, I would be worried, because Larry Heisel was a hell of a baseball hitter. 14 years, just under 1,200 games. As I mentioned, best known for his time in Milwaukee. But he started his career in Philadelphia, also played briefly with the Minnesota Twins in the mid-70s, but best known as a member of the Milwaukee Brewers, a team he signed with as a free agent back when free agency was just starting in Major League Baseball. Signed with them in November 1977 for the then princely sum of $525,833. That was a slight raise in 77. With the Twins, he was making a mere $47,200. But Larry Heisel was worth it because of all those games over 14 years. He had a career batting average of .273, also hit 166 home runs, and was also not a runner-up, but a candidate for the MVP for a couple of years, including 1978, his first season with the Brewers. He was the third highest vote-getter for MVP in the American League, two-time All-Star. He was also in the running for Rookie of the Year when he was with Philadelphia back in 1969. And Larry Heisel is probably best known as the hitting coach for the Toronto Blue Jays in the early 1990s. I was a big Blue Jays fan growing up, which doesn't make much sense because I grew up here in Tampa, Florida, but I loved the Blue Jays, and I remember Larry Heisel. He was a big factor in them winning the World Series back in 92 and 93. In fact, in 1993, I think the Blue Jays had one of the best batting lineups in the history of baseball. Very underrated. People kind of get lost in home run totals. But in 1993, John Olerud, Paul Molitor, former Brewer and teammate of Heisel back in the 70s, and Roberto Alomar finished 1, 2, and 3, respectively, in the American League in batting average. So Larry Heisel, again, the career .273 hitter and a very good player, very underrated player, but a very dependable all-star caliber player for Philly, Minnesota, and Milwaukee, still making his impact with the Toronto Blue Jays as a coach 10 years after his playing career, winning a couple of World Series again with the Blue Jays. Right now, Larry Heisel, if you're wondering, is currently employed with the Brewers. He is the manager of youth outreach, also the president of Major League Mentoring, a youth mentoring program in Milwaukee. Some interesting notes here about Larry Heisel. If I asked you this baseball trivia question, if I said, who was the first designated hitter in Major League Baseball history? I would bet most of you, right off the top of your head, you would know. It was Ron Blomberg, New York Yankees, first DH, 1973. That is true. Ron Blomberg was the first DH in Major League history. But if you count spring training, who was the first designated hitter? It was Larry Heisel with the Minnesota Twins in 1973. In his first two at-bats as a designated hitter, he hit a three-run home run, then he hit a grand slam. So Larry Heisel, quite the hitter and quite the card here, the 82 Donruss card, again, number 358. Now, the 82 Donruss set was a marked improvement over the 81 set, although not an outstanding improvement. It's not one of the best cards in the history of baseball card collecting, but much better than 81, and in my opinion, the best of the three sets released in 1982. Our next podcast will talk about the 82 top set, but of course the bar was set so far down with Fleer. Tops I was never thrilled about. Again, we'll give details of that in the next podcast, but the 82 Donruss set was decent. At the very least, much better than what they had the year before. Now, the year before, again, most of the card is taken up by the front of the card, I should say, is taken up by the photograph. The Donruss logo, which was very clunky in 1981, still clunky in 82. In fact, it takes up a sizable portion of the upper right corner with the Donruss logo and the 82 right underneath it. At the bottom, a very simple, dare I say, clip art baseball and baseball bat. Inside the baseball is the team's name, printed out in a very 1980s computer-like font. And then along the bat, you have the player's name and his position. The biggest change, and I think the biggest improvement compared to 1981, is actually on the back. 81 Donruss, which tried to tell the story of the ball player with the stats of just the previous season and his career numbers and a diatribe of timeline events right in the middle of it. Well, they abandoned that, went from the more traditional baseball card look with stats and some career highlights, a little bit of text there. The interesting thing about the Donruss stats, though, was that they didn't do the complete stats like Fleer and Topps did. Donruss still decided to be different as they had the recent major league performance stats. They just showed the last 5 years in the major league. Again, a nice change from the 81 set, but still leaving you feeling kind of empty, especially when you look at a guy like Larry Heisel, who had a pretty good career. By 1982, you couldn't boil down Larry Heisel's career into just five seasons. Yeah, it gave you a nice little glance, but this is a guy who had been performing the entire time he was in the major leagues. And you could certainly say that about a lot of other star players. Nolan Ryan, Mike Schmidt, Paul Molitor, Phil Niekro, Burt Blyleven, Reggie Jackson, you know, stars and semi-stars who had some good moments in their career. You couldn't boil down their career to just 5 years. So it was unique, but again, left you wanting more, in my opinion. Now, I will say, even though Donruss didn't list the entire career stats of a player, if you look at the back of an 82 Donruss card, and we've got it pictured up along our podcast here, it is a nice, clean, easy-to-read look. You've got a little bit of blue in the background, mostly black text on white background. On the blue background, it's white text, very clean, very nice. I like it. And that's what kind of makes the 82 Donruss set stand out, in my opinion, and especially compared to the competition. 82 Fleer was an absolute turd. 82 Topps, as we'll mention in the next podcast, not my favorite for a number of reasons. And one is the back of the card. 82 Topps was very difficult to read, as they had, I think, purple or black text on top of a green background with that gray cardstock. Donruss, totally different story. So there you go. The card that we pulled when talking about the 82 Donruss set, number 358, Larry Heisel. And I have a fun little story to tell you just to wrap up this podcast. I will always remember the 82 Donruss set so well because when I was a kid collecting baseball cards, my first big card pull happened with 82 Donruss. Now, it didn't happen in 1982. It happened in, I want to say maybe 1990. It was very early in my collecting career, maybe 91, but you know, around 90, 91, I would have been 12 or 13 years old, had been furiously collecting for just a couple of years at that point, and didn't have a whole lot of money. I learned at a young age how valuable money really was because I wasn't rolling in it. I wasn't quite at the age where I was mowing the neighbor's yards for $20. That would take a couple more years before I got that. However, I was still mowing my yard, and my parents were kind enough when I mowed the yard to pay me $5 or $6. If the grass was very long, which in Florida it tends to get with all the thunderstorms in the summer, you know, maybe they give me $8 to $10. And of course, you know, you're 12 years old, you've got $10, you feel like you hit the lottery. So when I was collecting cards early, I typically bought the newest packs, and packs back then were still about 50 cents. Unless you bought Upper Deck, then you were spending a dollar on those. So I didn't buy a lot of Upper Deck when I was younger because I didn't really have the disposable income to do that. And when it came to older sets, I had to buy cards that I could afford. So it was 89 Score, or 88 Tops, 86 Tops as well. So I had to pick and choose. Well, one day I was able to collect enough money to where I could afford a pack of 82 Donruss. There was a hobby shop in Brandon, Florida, where I used to go to on a fairly regular basis. And they had, you know, packs going back maybe 2 or 3 years, pretty much every brand. And then they had, you know, like an 85 Tops box or an 84 Tops box. 82 Donruss was one of the oldest ones they had, and I bought two packs. Yes, I managed to have $10 together as a 12-year-old kid, got two packs, and on the first pack, as I'm sorting through the cards, right in the middle of the pack, the gem, not only of 82 Donruss, but all 1982 baseball cards, the one card, the one player that saved baseball cards that year, Cal Ripken Jr. And I remember when I saw it in the pack, I almost dropped it. It's just like, and part of it was just like, I got a huge, big name rookie card. And also, whoa, I got something worth a lot of money. So I learned very quickly this $5 investment turned out to be, I think then it was like a $50 card. I have no idea what it's worth now. I still have it. And yeah, that was one of those cards I put in the screw down cases, but why not? That was the biggest card that I had. And I still cherish it to this day, not only because it is worth something, although, like I said, I don't know exactly how much it's worth. I don't have it professionally graded. I think if you just have a, you know, a non-graded Ripken card that's in mint condition, it's like $35 or something. But there is, of course, that, you know, that value that you can't just put money on. There's a very, very special feeling when I see that card, because I remember at the tender young age of 12 or 13, however old I was, and giving up most of my hard-earned money to buy just a couple of packs of 82 Donruss, I was able to pull the Cal Ripken Jr. card. Also, I think it was in the second pack, I pulled a Nolan Ryan card, which was worth a few dollars, and very cool to see Nolan Ryan, certainly in his prime in 1982 then with the Houston Astros. So even though the 82 Donruss set is not a memorable one, it is an upgrade over 81 by many standards. All that I laid out for you, I think it is the best of all three of the 82 sets. I'll tell you why it's better than Tops in our next podcast. And of course, I have a very special reason why I like 82 Donruss. That first big pull, that big name rookie card, it wasn't from the year the card was published. It was a few years older, but pulling that Cal Ripken card, which I still have, that's always special. You know, it means a lot when I can look at that 82 Donruss card and the first thing I think of is the Cal Ripken rookie and the memories over, 25 years now of pulling that at the local hobby shop. Very cool. Now, if you have any similar stories you wish to share, if you want to talk about the 82 Donruss set, Larry Heisel, Cal Ripken Jr., or just anything, again, look for us on Twitter at Wax and Gum Stains, and look for our next podcast. We'll put these out a couple times a week. Now, you've made it this far. I thank you so much. I hope that you can share this experience with other friends who collected or still collect baseball cards. Please send them our Twitter handle, Wax and Gum Stains. Send them the link to the podcast. We're more than happy to have you share it with a lot of other collectors who hopefully, like me and like you, have a lot of great memories of the baseball cards and the players that were on them from the 1980s as we go rummaging through this monster box. I'm Matt Salmon, your host for Wax Ecstatic. Thanks so much for tuning in. Again, 82 Tops is our next podcast. We look back at 82 Donruss, and we look forward to your comments at Wax and Gum Stains on Twitter. We'll see you next time.